Alvarado versus the Corporate Cleaning Service. Mr. Werman?
Yes, Judge. Good morning. May it please the Court, Doug Werman for the Plaintiffs' Appellants. Plaintiffs were entitled to judgment on their Fair Labor Standards Act and Illinois Minimum Wage Law claims for two primary reasons. First, the District Court conflated the difference between job rate and commission rate compensation plans. And in doing so, the court applied an overly broad and legally incorrect test in not requiring defendant to prove that it paid plaintiffs commissions based on the application of a bona fide commission rate. Defendant had no plan that identified ex ante or ex post the percentage that plaintiffs would be paid from any customer sale. And the district court disregarded the evidence that demonstrated.
But isn't the critical point that these window cleaners, window washers, are working irregular hours? So sometimes they work more than 40 hours a week. Other times they take weeks off, you know, in the winter and so on. And isn't that the point of the commission provision of the Fair Labor Standards Act, that there's no reason to give these irregular hour workers overtime because they have just decided, and they really like this flexibility, so they work more than 40 hours some weeks, don't work at all other weeks, and that's how they like to do things. And it would be windfall to give them overtime.
No, Judge. Right?
If they take weeks off and they don't do any work at all, why should they be getting overtime when they do work? If it all comes out to, 2,000 hours a year, why should they have an advantage over workers who work a steady 40 hours a week?
Judge, the record evidence was not that they were taking weeks off at a time. This is not a case where, for example, of a real estate agent who might decide to take weeks off at a time.
Goes to Mexico in the winter for a couple of months, 6 months off?
There's no record evidence that individuals, plaintiffs, were going to Mexico for months at a time. Many workers in the United States take a vacation, and these workers may be no different, that they might take a week or two off. But the record evidence was quite clear that corporate cleaning's business, they were always busy.
They were always busy.
The company was always busy, and there was always work.
Pestered by the Falcons.
The defendants like to say that the work might be interrupted by Falcons, Judge, but that was a cute fact in the evidence. That was a cute fact that was presented by the defendants as part of the record evidence. But the truth of it is,
did you say a cute fact?
Yes, Judge. But the truth of it is that the plaintiffs worked significant number of hours, and they worked significant number of hours year round.
But there are certain weather conditions under which they can't work.
There are weather conditions in which the plaintiffs were not able to work.
And in Chicago, and that can be for an extended period of time, right?
It can be, but the testimony at trial was that when the weather turned bad, there certainly would be days they would not work, but the company was able to find work for employees washing the interior of windows.
Yeah, but wouldn't that be a little bit different of a volume? For instance, in the summer or whatever, when the weather is good, I was raised on the farm and said you make hay when the sun shines. Same thing here. I mean, I don't live here, but when I walk around town and I look at these tall buildings, I realize that there's a lot of work that might have to be done, but there's a lot of variation in each of those buildings. But as far as the time, I didn't really study all of the record, but it would seem that in the winter time there's going to be smaller crews. There's still work to be done, but it's not the same volume as when the weather's good.
There's less volume of work to be done in the winter time, but there was no record evidence that during the winter months, employees were still not working overtime pay.
Well, is the full crew working all, or does the crew diminish when the weather's bad?
I don't know if that's clear.
It's logical to me. That's why I ask that. It just seems that there's a lot of times when it's 15 degrees and windy, you don't want to be hanging up there on some scaffold.
Judge, it's logical. Agreed.
Yeah, and so that maybe there are some buildings that are easier to work on in that situation, and maybe they would still work in the winter. But I think what the other judge is asking, there's no consistency here, and therefore it's difficult to measure over time and on a normal basis.
Well, what we're talking about is that there was a problem in terms of being able to track or record the number of hours that the crews were working each day and each week. That was no problem because the crews would report to the company in the morning. They would need a report before they would start at a building. They would end the day. They would return to the company. So in terms of tracking the number of hours worked, that was no issue. This is not a case where these employees are completely unsupervised and there's an issue in terms of the number of hours that they're working. And of course, it's the employer's obligation to record and keep accurate records.
Well, is your claim that these people are working more than 2,000 hours a year?
Yes, Judge, they work.
Well, what's the evidence of that?
Well, the evidence of it is largely testimonial evidence in terms of the numbers of hours that they work. I mean, the company could have kept precise records, of course, of the number of hours that the employees didn't. And because they don't have the exact number of hours, the Mount Clemens standard is going to apply in terms of...
What is the testimonial evidence?
Well, we had one plaintiff testify at trial. He testified to the number of hours that he was working on a daily basis. But there's not, I don't believe that there is significant or really any record evidence as to the exact number of hours that the plaintiffs were working each year. But what this appeal raises, at least on the commission side, and of course, in order for the defendant to be even entitled to take the commission exemption, they also have to be a retail and service establishment under the Act. And that's the other component of the appeal. We claim that.
What is a service establishment as distinct from a retail establishment?
Well, a service establishment is providing services like window washing into the stream of commerce. I don't know that I don't know exactly what the distinction is for purposes of the statute. Has it been?
Well, doesn't that mean that you're much more likely to have irregular hours with a service establishment? You're providing a service. Someone needs a service. That's different from, you know, where you can work creating inventory for some future sales, right? So if some building just got splashed or something and the windows are filthy and they're having a big meeting there, they want to get it clean, it has to be cleaned immediately, right? So some workers, some window washers may have to work overtime. But if they're compensated by being, you know, given weeks off, they end up working no longer hours in a year, and then why would they get overtime?
They would get overtime quite candidly because I think the statute requires
remember, it talks about a service establishment, and if this is a service establishment, you can see, you know, why to think of it in commission terms. People who work when they have to work, but they're not working, you know, 9 to 5, then why wouldn't they fall in the exemption?
Well, the Department of Labor has long-standing regulations in terms of that define what kind of establishments are retail and service establishments for purposes of the 207I exemption, and those interpretations and regulations have been on the books since 1941.
Well, are you saying this cleaning? Window cleaning company is not a service establishment?
It is a service establishment, right, Judge, but it's not a service establishment. It provides a service, but it is not a retail and service establishment for purposes of the 207I
Why
exemption.
Not?
Because it has the attributes, Judge, of a wholesaler and not of any...
Well, it's not a wholesaler.
Judge, when you look at the kinds of purchasers of its services... When you look at the price and the quantities in which its services are provided, it's doing everything.
I don't see how you can describe it as a wholesaler. It's not selling something for resale.
It is selling something for resale because its customers are not me. They're not any individual. I cannot return to my office after court and call the defendant and ask it or hire it to clean the window of my office suite or even my entire building. The only entity or person that can do that is a property management company who contracts with defendant.
Wait a minute. You just said the difference between an individual office or the whole building. And I think there's a big difference.
Let me be more clear. I'm sorry. The only persons that hire defendant to perform services are property management companies, building owners, and they then resell.
Wait a minute. You said property manager and building owner.
Condo associations.
I think a building owner is the one who's going to pay.
The building owner, what happens is the property management company, for example, will hire defendant to wash the entire building, and the price or the cost of defendant services are then passed through or resold to the tenants in the form of rent or special assessments.
I'm not clear on that. You say the property management, okay, they hire to have the whole building washed, cleaned.
Yes.
And as I've looked through town even this morning, I don't normally gaze, I'm not from here. I live in South Bend, and we don't have tall buildings. The only one that's tall is falling apart. But I notice how much different each building is and how it would take a different calculation for each building. And what I'm trying to figure out is if it's there's only one customer, and that's the whoever owns the building or controls the building, and that's who's going to pay. That's why I look at a retail as one big customer. And I just don't see where you're trying to bifurcate this with a making a wholesaler the, I guess what they call a manager or the contractor and the owner.
It's a tripartite kind of business relationship where there's the vendor, there's the buyer, and then there's the tenant. And so the vendor is corporate cleaning service, and they're
vendor is whom?
Corporate, the defendant in this case, the corporate cleaning service.
Yeah.
And their window washing services are being bought or paid for by the property management company, who then resells those, the cost of those services.
That's
to
That's strictly
tenant.
An agency relationship. The whoever it is that lines it up for the owner pays.
Well, The appellate decisions that have addressed similar kinds of relationships have actually held similar kinds.
Look, here's what you're arguing, which is totally untenable. Suppose I'm in the trucking business, and so I buy a truck from some automotive company. And of course, since I'm in the trucking business, this is a business expense. When I charge for transporting stuff and so on, I'm trying to recover the cost of the truck. But that doesn't mean that the automotive company that sold the truck to me is a wholesaler, because as the buyer, I'm going to actually try to recover the cost in my business, right?
That's because of the price and the quantity in which you're talking about. Look, has a retail.
It's the same thing. The company sells a truck to someone who's in business, and he's going to try to recover the cost of the truck in dealing with his customers. And that's just like the property management company, which is paying for these window washers. And sure, this is going to be reflected in rental and so on, but that doesn't make the window cleaner a wholesaler.
Well, the Judge, I don't agree. The Department of Labor.
Well, then, do you think that in my truck example, the automotive company is a wholesaler?
I think that if
answer my question, yes or no.
In your example, it is more akin. In your example, it is more akin to a retailer.
Why?
But because of the price, who the purchaser is, the price and the quantity in which the good is being sold. But corporate cleaning doesn't sell the washing of one window or one floor of a building. It's selling the sale of an entire building. In fact, more than 50% of its customers are more than one building.
Look,
and the average
I'm General Motors, I'm selling tens of thousands of trucks, and almost all of those trucks are used in the business. So why is that any different from the window cleaners selling to building managers?
It may, depending upon if those trucks are being resold and what volume.
Nobody has ever argued that because you sell to businessmen, you're a wholesaler.
Judge, it's been our position in the case that all of the evidence, the testimonial, the documentary, and the statistical mathematical evidence demonstrated that there was not a bona fide commission rate, that the plaintiffs were not paid commissions based on the application of a bona fide commission rate. And so I appreciate the court's concerns about fluctuation in hours of work, but a precondition to being paid on a commission basis is the payment from the application of a bona fide commission rate. And I have an opportunity to talk about that. But that's the key issue, one of the two key issues in the appeal. And what the mathematical evidence showed is that plaintiffs were paid fixed amounts, that defendants varied those, that plaintiffs were paid fixed amounts, but defendants varied customer charges wildly. And that's the essence of a job rate compensation plan. And job rate compensation plans, employees are entitled to overtime pay. Thank you.
I know that your red light's on. We're going to clear up this issue. I don't see the resale. I don't care whether it's the building manager or the owner of the building or whoever. When we're talking about there's not a resale.
Well,
and that's what's confusing me here is one buyer. And that's the building owner, manager, whatever you want to call it.
There's one buyer, and then those services are then being resold to the tenant.
I don't get
the
resale. How are they resold?
They're resold in the form of the property management companies.
It's not the service that's resold.
Pardon me?
It's not the service that's resold. It's not that, you know, the window cleaner comes in and says, okay, now we cleaned your windows, and here's our mop, and here's our brush, and so on, so you can go clean them even cleaner. Right?
Well, there's the third, the fourth, the fifth, and the ninth circuit have all addressed situations very similar to this one, and all have found that the service is for resale, or the good is for resale. So, and all those cases are cited in the Department of Labor's amicus brief and our brief as well. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. So, Mr. Levin?
Good morning. May it please the court. Ira Levin for the defendants. To one of the earlier questions, Your Honor, on page 28 of the trial court's decision, the evidence showed that during the winter months when business is slow, many window washers return to Mexico. Then, in the spring...
Well, your opponent denied that. He said there was no evidence anyone went back to Mexico.
That's part of the record, Judge, and that was established at the...
So someone testified that he went back to Mexico?
That's correct. And in addition to that, when they return, the plaintiff represented himself, Mr. Alvarado, said he preferred to work longer days when the weather conditions were good, which is a hallmark of this type of system in order to make up for the hours when business is slow. And certainly, I think it's rather obvious in Chicago, it's a seasonal job for cleaning, especially the outside of buildings.
Well, the days are longer in the summer, I guess.
That's true.
That's where the variable comes in, I guess.
Well, the weather conditions are certainly a major factor in Chicago, and even during parts of the spring, summer, there are wind factors or other factors that prevent cleaning, and sometimes buildings won't allow you to get there till 9 o'clock in the morning. A condominium building, for example, won't allow that to start until a certain time of the day. So there are a lot of variables which affect the ability to work and the time to work. what the cases have said, especially this circuit, is the hallmark of this type of system is that seasonality, as well as the decoupling of the actual time you're paid, actual time you work versus what you're paid. And what the evidence showed at the trial was that these workers are in fact paid on an incentivized basis. They're assigned a certain number of points for a job. Those points equate to dollars per hour on their union wage, but they often work, and the plaintiff in fact testified to this, less hours than it actually takes them to complete the job. So if you have 10 hours worth of pay and you only have to work 5 hours worth of time, it incentivizes you to go to the next job, the next building. But all of those are connected to whether or not you have a job or a sale to go to. And that is the basic premise of a commission system, that it's based upon a sale. It's not like...
The collective bargaining agreement here has an overtime provision, right?
The collective bargaining agreement had a piece rate section, and it mentioned overtime wages, but the trial court specifically said no one from the union ever sought to enforce that,
right? But
and there was no grievance ever brought
to pay documents that. Your company provides, they indicate that you're entitled to overtime as well, don't they?
The document reflects a comment to that effect, Judge. Yes, that's correct. But again, whether or not something the system is a commission system, is there's no definition of the word commission under the Act, and the law says you look at what's actually happening, and all of and the plaintiff himself admits the system he's been paid under all the time he worked there was this commission-styled system.
There was a period of time, though, with what, late 07, early 08, when you switched to an overtime system?
Some of the plaintiffs in this case decided during the case that they would not work on the commission-based system, and they went to an hourly system, which in fact then carved out some of those, and they were paid differently than the rest of the people, rest of the workers within the company. That also was one of the issues that skewed this price per point analysis, the statistical analysis that we went through with in the trial court with Judge Chang, along with other principled reasons for the adjustments to how we priced our customers. But the trial court was very clear in finding that the testimony of our three witnesses was credible and consistent in demonstrating that the company has used its point system in good faith to both calculate worker compensation and customer charges, and they were credible in explaining the variations in those final customer charges, which were dictated by real-world conditions, discounts
to
customers.
Is the union a party, or has it taken a position in the case?
The union is not a party, and the union has not taken a position.
Which
in the
union
case.
Is it?
Local one.
Of?
Service union.
I'm
service
sorry.
Workers, I believe. Local.
I didn't hear you.
Local one.
Of? What union?
Judge, I may misspeak. I'm not certain.
Okay, it doesn't matter. Let me ask you about the Falcons. The Falcons attacking the window clean. Is this a seasonal thing? Is it when the Falcons are building their nests or something like that? Or
Judge, I only know that at the trial itself, there was some testimony that it has happened on occasion. I'm not familiar with the
patterns.
So
would there be days maybe when they're worried about the Falcons and therefore they work less or they take the day off? Or I'm just curious. It seemed an odd thing.
Yes, Judge. I don't know that there's any pattern.
It's when they have a nest in their young and it eggs.
I would imagine so.
It's that period of time.
I would imagine so. But, Judge, I'm not familiar with the pattern.
Okay, so there's no evidence about the nesting?
There was not. Okay. It was weather conditions were really the primary issue that related to that.
Well, I'm curious about this resale concept, and your opponent cites these other circuit cases, including the plumbing, heating, and air conditioning case out of the Fifth Circuit. What's your response to that?
Well, I think the answer to the question is it wholesale? And there's no description of this type of service. We go in and wash windows for a price. If you have a property manager that is the conduit through which you get hired, that cost gets passed on to a building owner. If a building owner doesn't like the service, they call, and you have to come back out. But it is connected to or a pass-through to the people who live in those buildings. Judge Dow did a very thorough examination of all the issues with respect to retail within the first one of the first rulings in the case and went through that process. And there are pest control service examples, computer or cable installation examples of that, cases that we've cited in our briefs. But there's no evidence that there's any reselling of what we do, which is wash windows, which serves the everyday needs of the community.
Is it basically then one transaction? You, somebody sells and then the other pays for it? So one serves, the other pays for it. There's not a series of an intermediate buying and selling.
No, Your Honor. It is just we estimate the job. We look at it in terms of what we the compensation to the workers, how that and that relates to how we price it out to the customers, and ultimately we, if we get the job, we invoice the customer for that particular job.
And you invoice
for that particular
the person
period.
That makes the decision to wash the windows.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
The person who makes the decision to have the windows washed is the person who's going to pay for it.
Yeah, the property manager who acts on behalf of the condominium association
no, he's an
hires.
Agent, then.
Correct.
Yeah, but I don't know who writes the check, but there's only one.
That's correct, Your Honor. I think really in looking at these cases, I think this court in Mehmet talked about it, and I thought it was really applicable here. The presumed narrow construction of the exemption is at best a tiebreaker, and in very close cases, and not even that if some offsetting canon of construction is in play, as it normally there will be. The district court here, after a trial, did not find this to be a close call. All the hallmarks of a commission system existed here. The decoupling of actual pay to hours worked, incentivized pay, seasonal employment, pay based on sales. These are not low-income wage earners that the FLSA is trying to protect. They're unionized, well-paid workers. There was no evidence of any substandard conditions that existed in connection with these jobs, and the workers were working seasonally and under this incentive system to get paid what they got paid, which was substantial. I have nothing further unless the court has a question.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Werman, do you have anything for your time? Which is by, but you can have another minute.
Pardon me?
You can have another minute.
Thank
if
you.
You'd
Judge, really it comes down to whether or not the plaintiffs were paid on a piece rate basis, I'm sorry, job rate basis or a commission rate basis. Job rate workers are entitled to overtime pay. While it's true that all commissions are decoupled from hours of work, not all wage payments are not all wage payments decoupled from hours of work are commissions. Job rates are also decoupled from hours of work. Job rate workers are entitled to overtime pay. And it's true that all commissions are based on sales, but not all wage payments based on sales are commissions. Job rates are also based on sales. Because
so how does one distinguish between them?
Because a job rate worker receives a fixed amount of compensation regardless of the sales price. The job rate worker doesn't care about how much the sale ultimately is for.
Well, they get paid more if they work faster. You want a piece rate?
Commission rate workers and job rate workers, their compensation is both a function of their output. So that's not really the difference. The difference is that a commission is a bona fide commission rate is a compensation that's paid based upon a consistent application of a plan. If you put in two variables into the plan, you're going to get the same result every time. The same two variables is going to result in the same commission. And that the evidence in this case undoubtedly showed that was not.
So is there a reason for treating these two categories you're distinguishing differently?
Well, in section 207G of the FLSA, it's quite expressed that
a reason. Is there a reason for this difference?
Well, I don't know that I can explain what the functional difference is between treating a job rate worker and a commission worker. Some of the other hallmarks of commission plans that you identified might be more applicable in a commission-type compensation structure.
One tries to interpret statutes and regulations so they're not senseless, right?
Yeah, well, agreed. Thank you. If you have no other questions, thank you.
Thank you very much to both counsel. And we'll move on.